welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and coming up in this hour, radio drama. We'll hear Joseph Cotten in a play coming up on the Globe Theater later on, but right now it's the Hallmark Playhouse with the young Abraham Lincoln portrayed by Gregory Peck. Carl Sandburg's story, The Prairie Years, next, from February 3rd, 1949 on CBS.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Gregory Peck in Carl Sandburg's The Prairie Years on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. On our Hallmark Playhouse tonight, we dramatize for you a story which is not only enshrined in every American heart, but has also been told in one of America's best-loved books, The Prairie Years by Carl Sandburg. This book forms a part of that great biography of Abraham Lincoln to which Carl Sandburg devoted many years of his life and which has become a classic in the literature of our time. And there could be no higher praise of it than to say that it is worthy of its subject. Perhaps sometime someone will study the effect upon a writer of writing a great man's biography. For on the one occasion I met Carl Sandburg, I couldn't help thinking that something of the humanity and at the same time the humility of Lincoln had entered his own personality. The Prairie Years tells the story of Lincoln as a young man, a story in which the shape of things to come is nobly foreshadowed. And we are especially privileged tonight to have with us, taking the part of Lincoln, one of Hollywood's most distinguished actors, Gregory Peck. And now, Frank Goss, may we have a word from you?
There are Hallmark cards for every memorable occasion on your calendar.
Hallmark Playhouse, presenting Carl Sandburg's The Prairie Years and starring Gregory Peck.
Pioneers are half gypsy. Their lookout is on horizons from which at any time another and stranger wander song may come calling and take the heart. They're luck hunters. And luck. Is it yonder, over the horizon, over yonder? Is there a calling and a calling? The pioneers so often are believers in luck. Out yonder. Such was the pattern of my prairie years. The mystery of imagination, of reconstructing and piecing together today the things my eyes saw yesterday, has always absorbed me. When I was seven, a hoot owl crying in the branches would call me from my bed, and I'd go to look up at the high riding quarter moon and the white shine of thin frost on the long open spaces of the sky. I'd watch the moon and wonder what it could tell me, and I'd fancy there were voices that I couldn't quite distinguish, and I'd wonder what they were saying.
Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln. I know now what they might have told me that winter I was seven.
Abe Lincoln, 16,000 wagons came along one turnpike in Pennsylvania today, heading west.
Abe Lincoln, the first steamboat curved into the Ohio River today and landed passengers at Louisville.
Abe Lincoln, there are steady lines of ships, long lines bringing the war taxed and the war weary from Europe to America.
Abe Lincoln, the wagons are slipping through the passes of the Allegheny Mountains. The moon, Abe Lincoln, looks down ahead of those wagons and sees broken wagon wheels, rusty skillets, empty moccasins, and the bones of horses and men. Abe Lincoln, you are blood and breath of many of these things. You will know them better in the years to come.
The things my eyes saw yesterday, the tricks and whims of the skies, the creeping vines of ivy and wild grape, the ways of snow, rain, drizzle, sleet, my own axe biting into sugar maple and sycamore. For 6 and 7 months of each year I grew, my feet were bare against the bareness of the earth. It may be the earth communicated to me then in her own tough gypsy slang one or two knacks of living worth keeping. And somewhere, too, along those years of my growing, I discovered books. Books that lighted lamps in the dark rooms of my gloomy hours. Over and over I'd say to myself, someday, the time will come when I'll be free from work for a few weeks or a few months, and then I will read. Please, God, then I will read. And so I grew, surviving loneliness, monotony, floods, forest and prairie fires, snake bites, horse kicks, chills, fever, malaria, and milk sick. We were living in Goose Nest Prairie in the southern part of Coles County when I reached my majority and was lawfully free to go if I chose.
Really going, are you?
Oh, yes. I have to get out on my own sometime. I better be at it.
Where you heading?
New Salem. Man named Denton Offit said he'd give me a job.
Well, I'm sure I wish you luck at it. You can come back as soon as you've wasted enough time to suit yourself. I'd better see to the stock.
Abe, I tried to stay out of the way. I wanted him to have his time alone with you.
I'm gonna miss you. Oh, lady. Lady. You have no idea how I'm going to miss you.
The house is going to seem mighty empty without you, Abe. But it's time you were getting on. You've got a lot to do in the world.
Well, I don't know what yet.
You'll find out. You're going to make your mark.
I hope I can make you proud of me.
I'm proud of you now, Abe.
Bless you. Bless you. God keep you. So, with my belongings wrapped in a handkerchief bundle and tied to a stick over my shoulder, I was on my way to New Salem. I floated a canoe down the Sagamon River, going to a new home with laughter and youth in my bones. And in my head, a rag bag of thoughts I could never expect to sell. Soon as I got there, I went right to work at Denton Offit's store.
Well, Abe, the shelves look pretty good. Let's check through the stock. Is that a lady's bonnet, that thing with a feather?
Must be. I can't imagine a man wearing it. Isn't it awful what women will put on their heads?
Oh, good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Denton.
Yeah, I'll make you acquainted with my new clerk, Abe Lincoln. Abe, this is Mr. Rutledge, one of the town leaders.
Howdy.
Nice to know you.
I'm
fine.
The things my eyes saw yesterday. Oh, the beauty of the things my eyes saw yesterday. How do you do, Miss Rutledge?
Well, Hello.
I'm mighty pleased to meet you at last. Mighty pleased to meet you at last, Miss Rutledge.
At last?
Well, I knew I was going to meet you, but I didn't know when.
You knew you were going to... Oh, my father here told you you'd meet me.
Oh, no, not your father. My stepmother told me I'd meet someone like you.
Oh?
Would you like to join in the dancing?
I'd love to.
Oh, come on, then.
Hurry up, do-o-do, hurry up, do-o-do, hurry up, do-o-do.
In a moment, James Hilton will return to present the second act of Carl Sandburg's The Prairie Years, starring Gregory Peck. But first, picture a group of handsome young men gathered about a delicately fashioned urn. They wear loosely hanging tunics, have sandals on their feet, and on their heads are garlands of flowers. Now, at a signal, one steps forward, plunges his hand into the urn, and draws out what seems to be a small piece of paper. Eagerly, he unfolds it, for written here is the name of the young lady to whom he is permitted to send a valentine. Only it wasn't called a valentine then, for the year is 49 B.C., and we are in ancient Rome during the festival of Lupercalia. But the day does correspond to our February 14th, and you may be sure the greeting the Roman youth sends his lady will be a work of the most exquisite art. And in that way, at least, his valentine is like the Hallmark valentines that you will send.
Now we present Act Two of Carl Sandburg's The Prairie Years, starring Gregory Peck.
Yes, the mystery of imagination, of reconstructing and piecing together today the things my eyes saw yesterday, has always absorbed me. When I was 22, a hoot owl crying in the branches could still call me from my bed. And I'd stand watching the branches of the trees register their forks and angles in flat black shadows over the white flat spread of moon silver on the ground. I'd look up at the moon, wondering still what it could tell me. And I'd still fancy there were voices that I couldn't quite distinguish.
Abe Lincoln.
I know now what they might have told me that spring I was 22.
Abe Lincoln, coal and iron, steam and steel have been found.
Abe Lincoln, in France and in England, they are weaving cloth from American cotton.
Abe Lincoln, there are now about 10 million white people in the United States and about 2,300,000 colored slaves.
The moon, Abe Lincoln. The moon sees the farmer girls in New England rising before dawn to make their way to the factories.
The moon, Abe Lincoln. Here's the soft weeping of the negress whose husband has been sold at auction.
You are blood and bone of North, South, and West, Abe Lincoln. As the regions of America grow and struggle, you must understand their growth and struggle.
The things my eyes saw yesterday. In 1834, when I was 25, I was elected to the Illinois legislature. Now I was to leave New Salem and Anne Rutledge.
We're all going to miss you, Abe. But we do wish you good fortune at Vandalia.
Oh, thanks.
You must be excited.
Yes, but I'm sorry to leave New Salem.
Well, my goodness, you'll be back.
Have you heard anything from your betrothed?
Mr. McNeil? No.
But you're still engaged to him.
Well, the understanding was that as soon as he visited his family in New York, he would come back and we'd be married.
You love him, don't you, Anne?
I don't know.
don't know.
Father says I'm very fortunate to get a man like that. Handsome and well-situated. But I don't know, Abe. You see, this isn't the way I dreamed it when I was young. And it's hard to change dreams that have grown up with you.
What did you dream of?
I dreamt of someone young, full of laughter. I dreamt of someone of ambition, purpose, who would let me love him and help him. Someone not necessarily handsome, although, of course, I would think he was handsome. But someone strong, kind.
Well, could he have been interested in books and law and government?
Oh, he could have been, indeed.
Well, could he have been newly elected to the state legislature? Don't answer that. I shouldn't have said it. I had no right.
Oh, Abe, yes, he could have been newly elected to the state legislature. It isn't much of a description of John McNeil, is it? But it's what I've been dreaming of all the time I've been waiting for Mr. McNeil. It's a beautiful night.
Yes, it's beautiful.
What do you suppose the moon thinks about looking down on the whole world as she does?
Well, if she's as wise as she's made out to be, she must be thinking now, there's a man who lost his heart a long time ago. But what's the poor fool gonna do about it?
Perhaps I could write to Mr. McNeil.
I have no money. I'm deep in debt.
Money can always be earned, Abe.
Oh, man, do you really mean it?
Oh, Abe, you must have known. Everyone says it's written all over my face whenever I look at you.
Oh, Ann! Wait!
Put me down before Father comes down.
You write to McNeil and I'll go to the legislature and by this time next year, oh, darling. Things my eyes saw yesterday. Vandalia in the legislature. I introduced a bill limiting the jurisdiction of justices of the peace. I introduced a bill to authorize a toll bridge across Salt Creek. I offered a resolution relating to a state revenue to be derived from the sale of public lands. I worked steadily, constantly, joyously, my eyes and my heart on the future. I'd win the world and lay it at her feet. In the spring, I went back to tell her this.
Abe, we're going to be mighty pleased to have you in the family.
Well, thank you, sir.
In the fall, Anne is to go to a young ladies' academy in Jacksonville. And as soon as you have sufficient money to start out, you can be married.
The things my eyes saw yesterday. August of that same summer came. Corn and grass stunted of growth for want of rain. There was a scarcity of birds, a dry parchedness on the lips and on the land. And then, malaria.
Glad you're here.
Oh, I'd have come before if I'd known. Oh, darling, you look
so... I'll be better in a day or two. I've been making plans while I've been in bed. Every day I'm going to walk to your office with you. And then I'm coming back and get the house in order. And then the boys and I...
Boys?
Our sons.
Oh.
And then the boys and I will go on a picnic or fishing... Or maybe we'll hoe a row of beans and potatoes. And while we do that, we'll plan your dinner.
Anne.
Now you're going to have to build a big fireplace. Because the boys will want to be in front of it all the time. And so will you and I. And we'll sit in front of that fire every night. Growing old. Growing old together. It will be like that one. Oh, darling, say you believe in the future. Say you believe in it.
Of course I believe in it.
It was spring just a day ago. We've had so little time. So little time.
But we have the long years ahead.
Abe, if this should be all, if these few days of spring should be all, I want you to know how happy I've been loving you and knowing you love me.
Anne. Oh, Anne.
If it should be all, it was still worth all the years I lived to find you. In the last few moments of my lifetime.
My dear. My dearest.
Abe, there's no use sitting there like that. You've got to pull yourself together. The dead are at peace. The living must find their peace. Abe, do you hear me?
I hear you.
She was my daughter. I loved her, too. I've lost a daughter. You have work to do. You have things to put your mind to. You've got to force yourself.
I can't bear to think of her out there alone. The rain and the storm shan't beat on her grave. I can't bear it. I can't bear it.
Where are you going, Abe?
Goodbye. I was beyond thought. I have no memory of walking the 7 miles to the burying ground. I only know that at last I lay there. One arm across her grave. An eternal darkness pressing down on me. I awakened as from a sleep hours later. The storm had passed. And I looked up to see the high-riding quarter moon. I felt stripped and empty of all emotion. And I thought, this is the end for me. The end of dreams and plans and hopes and interests.
Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln.
Abe Lincoln. Abe
Lincoln. And somewhere within the moonlight and the mists were the voices I couldn't quite distinguish. But I know now what they might have told me that summer when I was 26.
Abe Lincoln, there are important years ahead.
Abe Lincoln, between 1850 and 1860, 23 million Americans will become 31 million Americans.
Abe Lincoln, the United States is going to become one of the powers of the world. New states are coming, Abe Lincoln.
There are words to be said, Abe Lincoln. Oh, yes, there are words to be said.
A house divided against itself cannot stand. I do
not expect. 4 score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
Abe Lincoln, there are 10 million white people in the United States and about 2,300,000 colored slaves.
Abe Lincoln, you are blood and breath of this country. You will know these things better in the years to come.
Gradually, as I sat there staring at the sky, an old-time order of control came back to me. I knew I'd changed. And I knew also that I'd keep to myself the gray mystery of the change. I knew that I'd go on somehow. I'd go back to my law, back to politics. For though a girl was gone and a lifetime I would never live was buried with her, another love was still left me. America. In one blinding moment of vision, a nation seemed opening before me, the nation that must be for all. The proud realization of a dream of freedom and liberty. So I left her grave. I went out of the burying ground, back into the world, and started on my out yonder, over the horizon, over yonder. Is there a calling and a calling? The pioneers so often are believers in luck, out yonder. Such was the pattern of my prairie year.
In a moment, James Hilton and Gregory Peck will return. Now, with Valentine's Day less than 2 weeks away, here's a very special treat that Hallmark has prepared for the youngsters. It's Hallmark's Make Your Own Valentine. Here again is James Hilton.
It's been a rare privilege tonight to hear the story of a great man as recorded by a great writer and played by a great actor. On behalf of all our Hallmark family, our sincere gratitude, Mr. Gregory Peck.
Thank you, Mr. Hilton. I can't think of a greater honor for an actor than to play the immortal Lincoln, and to play him as he was drawn by a writer and historian as great as Carl Sandburg. Lincoln's life and work is full of meaning for all of us. It has served to show that no matter who we are or where we come from, each of us can have a purpose, a message, a contribution to make to improve the world we live in. It may be a great work, a crusade, or just a simple word of cheer, a thoughtful expression. Each of us, in our own way, can find a means of expression that can help us and the people around us to live a happier life. And I might say that your fine Hallmark greeting cards serve very well as an everyday means of helping to do that. Thank you and your Hallmark people for inviting me here this evening.
You have made this a memorable evening for us, Mr. Peck. We shall certainly listen to you on your Prudential Hour program in the near future. And we'd like to remind you to listen with us next Thursday when we present one of the great love stories, Smiling Through, starring that fine and deservedly popular actor, Lou Ayres.
And the following week, Mr. Hilton, I understand Hallmark Playhouse will do your own story, Random Harvest.
Yes, and with a very brilliant star, Miss Joan Fontaine. And the week after that, Edna Ferber's So Big, starring Virginia Bruce. Our Hallmark Playhouse is every Thursday. Our director-producer is Dee Engelbach. Our music is composed and conducted by Lynn Murray. And our script was adapted tonight by Gene Holloway. So until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Look for Hallmark cards that are sold only in stores that have been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. Gregory Peck may currently be seen in the 20th Century Fox picture Yellow Sky. This is Frank Goss saying good night to you all from the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
With an all-star cast, a CBS radio broadcast of the Hallmark Playhouse hosted by author James Hilton, the Carl Sandburg story, The Prairie Years, heard on February 3rd, 1949. This is an hour of radio drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now, the Theater of Romance, renamed for the Armed Forces Radio Service recording, of which we'll hear next, to the Globe Theater, with the story One Life to Lose, featuring Earl Ross, Kathy Lewis, Bea Benaderet, and star Joseph Cotten. The program hosted by William Johnstone. Next on Tuned to Yesterday.
Here is your pass to the Globe Theater. Welcome to the Globe Theater, the radio theater playing exclusively to the men and women of the Armed Forces of the United Nations. Here for your entertainment are presented the finest plays selected from outstanding radio dramas. And here to tell you about tonight's play, in the absence of your regular host, Herbert Marshall, is Bill Johnstone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again to the Globe Theater.
Freedom is the heritage of all Americans. And in the recent global struggle, we learned how costly a prize freedom can be. Throughout the history of this country, there has been a constant struggle to preserve the American way of life. The hero of our play tonight was an outstanding fighter for freedom. His last words stand as an inspiration for all of us. I only regret that I have but one life to give to my country. Those were the words of Nathan Hale. Tonight, with Joseph Cotton as Nathan Hale, we present a theater of romance adaptation entitled One Life to Give.
He was as American as his birthplace, Coventry, Connecticut. He lived for a principle, freedom. And one day, when he was 20, he died for it. He started that last day much as any other. He rose, washed, and then he walked over to the window and stood looking out at the stars a moment, watching them for what he knew was the last time. And suddenly his thoughts stung his eyes to tears, and he turned his back on the window and shut his heart against the stars. He moved over to the table, sat down, and he wrote three letters. First,
my dear mother, I had hoped to spend another hour with you before the last hour. But you know why that is impossible. A spy does not choose his death nor his hours. What does a man write at a time like this? What does he say? What is there to say but thank you? Thank you for the years you have given me. Thank you for the stories
I've heard. Robin Hood was the bravest man in all England. He wore a suit of Sherwood green, and his bow was slung across his shoulder. He was strongest of the strong and bravest of the brave. Now one
thank
day...
Thank you for Robin Hood and King Arthur. For hours when the fire burned high and we roamed, you and I, across the mountains and the plains and the high seas of adventure. And thank you for nights on hilltops looking at the stars, asking questions of the universe. Thank you for stories dearer than you know. And thank you, too, for all the mornings of my life, winter mornings with the snow sifting from the clouds, and the warm, friendly smell of breakfast, for spring mornings when I awoke to find the sun calling me out, the restless trees tapping against the window.
Wake up, son. It's Saturday, and the whole day is ahead of us. What would you say to a picnic?
Remember how, after we had eaten, I'd lie on my back in the tall grass watching the clouds, my eyes on castles. Thank you for those picnics and for games and cakes and plans and dreams. Thank you for laughing with me and sometimes crying with me and for making me stand on my own two feet.
Mother, Mother, where are you?
Good gracious, son, your nose is all bloody. And what on earth has happened to your eye?
It got a fist in it.
Oh, it did it? And how did it happen to get a fist in it?
John Case hit me. And he took my lunchbox from me.
You let him?
Well, he's 2 years older than I am.
Son, I want you to go and get your lunchbox. Immediately. Go on now.
I came home minus a tooth, but John Case was minus three, and I had my lunchbox. Thank you for standing in a doorway creating memories, and thank you, too, for evenings. To this day, I remember the warm, comfortable feeling of my hand in yours, and the Madonna look about you as you tucked in the covers. And thank you, too, for guideposts and for the words that were those guideposts.
Son, I want to tell you something wonderful about your country that is like no other country in the world. It's a free country, and you are a free man. Or will be when you're grown.
What's so wonderful about that?
Oh, son, in other countries, you would be told how to worship and how to act and talk and even how to think. When you say, I am American, you are saying, I am a free man. I am an individual with great personal liberties. And when you say that, you must also say, I will cherish those liberties. I will guard them and keep them the proud, shining things they are, no matter what the cost.
Wonderful words for a boy to grow up by. words you had to measure up to that set the level of patriotism and the worth of valor. So thank you for words and for ideals and for memories. Whatever is good within me, I owe to you. I wanted to say all these things the day I took my leave of you, but the words came harder then. We actually said so little, do you remember?
What is it, son? What are you trying to tell me?
Mother, I'm not going to do any more teaching for quite a while, not for the duration of the war anyhow.
What are your plans, dear?
I don't know definitely what they are, except that there's some information needed and I'm going after it.
Behind the enemy lines?
Yes.
I'll miss you very much.
It's something I must do.
I know. And since you have the courage to go, I must have the courage to let you go. When must you leave?
Tonight.
Tonight? We'd best hurry then. There isn't much time. There's so little time.
All day to pack and then a moment to hold you close and to say a quick goodbye.
God bless you. God bring you safely home.
And to go off down the road, feeling your eyes upon me, to turn and look back at the top of the hill, to wave for the last time and then go on alone. And only now do we know that that was the last hour and the final farewell. And so, above all else, thank you for teaching me how to live, because you taught me, by the same token, how to die. With all my love.
The first was to his mother. The second was to a girl, a Miss Adams of Canterbury, Connecticut. He sat for a long time before he wrote. He sat for a long time.
Alice, my dearest, let me start by saying I love you above all women and will forever. My arms are very lonely for you tonight. My heart is suddenly most empty, for all the things I hold most sacred are being stripped from me. It is almost dawn, but I'm on the threshold of my longest night. I've been spending these last hours counting memories, reliving them. I remember the day we met. You were having some sort of party at your house, and you invited Walter Lamb, and he brought me along.
Alice, may I present a very good friend of mine?
I only needed to look into your eyes once to know that here was the beginning and the end of all things to me. I only needed to look once to think, of course. Now I know why I've been lonely sometimes. I was waiting for you. You know, I remember the very first word you ever said to me.
How do you do? I'm so glad to meet you.
Strange how little phrases can catch in your throat. How the loveliest memories become the most unbearable.
This is my father's picture, and that one is my mother when she was 17. That's her wedding dress. I plan to be married in it someday myself. That is, well, of course, I expect. Well, that is, every girl.
I made up my mind on the spot to ask you to marry me. The days that followed were the happiest I shall ever know.
Such a beautiful day. Anywhere?
No, not anywhere. Here, let me help you down.
Thank you.
There. Let's walk over to the edge of the cliff where we can watch the sea. What are you thinking at this exact moment?
I was thinking how good it is to be young and alive. What were you thinking?
I was thinking how good it is to be young and alive with you.
Take it, sir, that you wish to marry Alice?
Yes, sir. I'll try to make more money and to advance myself.
Just a minute. Let me ask you a question, sir. Why did you decide to become a teacher?
Well, it's not easy to put into words without sounding like a pompous fool, but
I wanted to teach because I think this next generation should understand why their grandfathers came to this country, what a store they set by human liberty, and what price we must pay to keep it at all costs. I believe that if we can teach our children the high value of liberty and honor, we will never lose either. I find it hard to put into words. Maybe it doesn't make much sense the way I say it.
Yes, it makes a great deal of sense. Don't worry about making money. It's much more important to worry about developing American citizens. Schoolmastering's a fine and honorable profession. We'd be mighty proud to have you in the family.
Then it's all right, sir?
It's all right, son. Go find her and tell her you both have my blessing.
You were in the garden. You had on a white dress. And there was a blue ribbon in your hair. And your name was Juliet and Heloise and Helen. And you were my heart forever.
I shall be honored to be your wife.
Some words a man is proud about forever. Were my hours multiplied by years, I'd not forget them.
Oh, my dear. It seems that the whole world is ours now. You know something? I want 5 sons, and I want them all to look just like you.
Oh, Alice.
You know, I have to keep a very stern check on myself. I keep wanting to run up to people I've never seen before and say, I've found someone who has the kind of smile that goes straight to your heart, and the kind of eyes that you get lost in, and the kind of arms that can shut out the whole world or gather it in. And he's in love with me. Alice Adams of Canterbury, Connecticut. Tell everyone you see about it, won't you? Because I want the whole world to know.
No, my darling, I love you so much. So very much. Alice. At first, we never talked about the war, though it grew more bitter and more deadly each passing day we tried to keep it away from our own small heaven. But at last, the cannons were so loud that we could not face realities and turn our backs on dreams. Remember when I told you I was leaving? We climbed a hill, and the stars were brighter than any stars had a right to be. But for the first time, we had no heart for stars.
You're going to be a spy.
That's what it comes down to.
Oh, darling, no. No, I don't want you to do it. I want you to stay here safe with me.
Darling, there's no safety anywhere when one nation aims its guns at another nation's liberty. Liberty must be defended to the death or not at all. It's conquer or be conquered in a case like this, Alice, and if we are conquered, we lose everything.
Those things are more important to you than I am?
Yes, because they're more important than myself. This America and what it stands for, living, worshiping, thinking in the ways we choose. Don't you understand, my darling?
I couldn't love you and not understand. It doesn't help. When you leave, the rest of my life goes with you. You will leave my heart bare when you go. Every cannon shot will blaze across it. And every time I read or hear of death, I'll die a little, not knowing whether you still live. Oh, darling, freedom and liberty are only words to me, but you are my life.
They're only words at this moment, Alice. Because we are young and life is very sweet and we have great plans for it. But none of the plans can add up to happiness unless those words do have meaning. No one wants to leave his home and loved ones. But Americans will always do it when something American is at stake. I must leave you now, Alice.
I'm sorry, dear. I'm really very proud of you. You know that.
Goodbye, Alice.
Goodbye.
You stared at me a moment, your head back against the wind, and then you turned and ran down the hill into the darkness, running inevitably and finally away from me. I stood there alone, and it was very cold on the hilltop. And darkness stretched on all sides of me. That was our farewell, that moment on the hill. And yet remember this. There will be promises and lips again for you. But my heart will know only your image through all eternity. And so, goodbye, my darling.
He rose restlessly. The stars were already fading. Dawn was an eternal thing, too close at hand. You must start the third letter.
My dear General, to have failed you is the greatest sorrow of my life. You know how much I wanted to succeed. I would have followed you anywhere. That hour I looked in your eyes and looked at history.
Your record is admirable, Captain, but you're so very young. I wish you weren't so young.
I shall serve you the better for it, sir, I promise you.
It's not an easy thing to ask a man to do. There is no compensation that is worth the risks you must take. Except the knowledge that you have served your country in a desperate need. I cannot let you go without telling you that.
Let me start as soon as possible, sir.
You can start at once. Now then, I will give you your instructions. You will disguise yourself as a Dutch schoolteacher and make your way as soon as possible.
I was betrayed by one who recognized my disguise. You already know the details of that. They found our papers. I was brought here to enemy headquarters, branded traitor and condemned to die. They said the usual things.
It's too bad that you saw fit to fight for a lost cause. You're a young man with a fine mind. You might have had a brilliant future. There is a way you can redeem your life if you like. You have only to lead us to your headquarters.
You're wasting your time.
You're wasting your life. You surely are not foolish enough to think our country stands a chance of winning.
We stand more than a chance. We're going to win. Don't forget, you're trying to conquer a frontier people. We climbed the hills and took the plains behind them. We reached into the soil with naked fists and wrested a living from the earth and rocks. We set our homes upon the land, and we will fight to keep those homes. There will be no oppression, no regimentation, no curtailing of rights in America. Our children will grow to manhood under a free flag and their children after them. We will kindle a fire of freedom that will blaze forever. I will die and perhaps thousands like me. But America will keep her flag in the wind and her pledge of freedom with it. My dear General, before you read this, I shall have paid the price of failure. But even before you read it, someone else will have picked up where I left off. They'll never defeat us. There is no defeat for those who fight for honor.
Three letters there were. The first signed,
Your Devoted Son.
The second,
Your Own Nathan.
The third,
Respectfully, Nathan Hale.
Already the sun was slanting through the bars. Already there were footsteps in the corridor. The key in the heavy lock, the door grating open. And then the last voice he would ever hear beckoned him into silence.
Are you ready, Captain?
Yes.
One moment before the final moment for words that would ring down the centuries.
I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country. Nathan Hale died in New York City 169 years ago this week, a 20-year-old schoolteacher with an unshakable faith in America and democracy. He died facing west, facing a western wilderness of river and mountain and plain that was to become a nation that spanned two oceans. He died facing west. Facing the first train, the first automobile, the first airplane. He died facing west, facing Gettysburg and Pearl Harbor, Guam and Corregidor, and Iwo Jima, facing battlefields and outposts that were to be branded into American history, Bataan and Wake and Okinawa, where many more would sleep, who would also give that one life in defense of country. There are no words big enough to express what should be said to the grocery clerk from San Francisco, the doctor from Peoria, the lawyer from Spokane, the schoolteacher from Coventry, Connecticut. No words. Only a solemn gratitude for the knowledge that we can say,
I am an American only because they died to give us the right to say it.
Those were the last letters and words of Nathan Hale, patriot and lover of freedom. Our thanks to Joseph Cotton for a truly inspiring performance, and to the Theater of Romance for Gene Holloway's fine radio play, One Life to Give. Our next Globe presentation will be an adaptation of Rachel Maddow's fine novel, Turnip's Blood, a fragile and beautiful love story with your former host, Herbert Marshall, playing the part of a love-struck doctor, and with Rosemary DeCamp as the girl in the case. This is your host, Bill Johnstone, saying so long till next time.
You have been attending the Globe Theater with Bill Johnstone as guest host and master of ceremonies. Listen for our next Globe Theater soon. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
The Globe Theater, from September 18, 1945, first aired on CBS, on the Theater of Romance, and rebroadcast to our troops overseas via Armed Forces Radio. That wraps this hour of drama on 2 and 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.